Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. In this very first episode, we'll be reviewing the Cricket World Cup that's on the go in England at the moment, and we have a special guest chatting to us straight from London. And in the second segment of the show, we'll chat to Times Live sports journalist Mahlatsi Mphahlele about the slightly thorny issue regarding sport and religion. Whether there's a line and can it be crossed? Right, the Proteas lost to Bangladesh by 21 runs at the Oval on Sunday after they failed to chase down 331 for victory. This after England beat South Africa by 104 runs in the opening game last Thursday, following which the West Indies beat Pakistan by 7 wickets after bowling them out for 105, and the New Zealanders Kiwis beat Sri Lanka by 10 wickets after bowling them out for 136. Australia beat Afghanistan by 7 wickets, chasing down 207. And for all the scores and up-to-date content, please go to timeslive.co.za and follow some of Telford Vice's writing, who is in the UK at the moment. South Africa do face India at the Rose Bowl in Southampton on Wednesday. And on to our special guest. His name is Daniel Gallen, and he is one of those lucky ones who is in the UK for the Cricket World Cup at the moment. I've known Dan for quite a few years now. He's a South African living in England, and he was at the Oval, fortunate or unfortunate, to watch the Proteas lose to Bangladesh, which has put them under heavy, heavy pressure. He writes for various online publications. He's one of the freelancers that are available to write for anyone who wants content from over there. I managed to chat to Dan after the game via Skype. Listen to this. Yeah, just to get cracking on the Proteas, obviously they lost by 21 runs, chasing 331. What are your thoughts overall on the game, and how in the world did we let Bangladesh get that far beyond 300?
You know what it is? For me, it was the way that they bowled with the ball. Lungi and Ngeen and Kagiso Rabada have the potential to be the most devastating partnership with the new ball. Red or white. I think they tick every box. They're tall. They're aggressive. They fast. They extract extra bounce. Kagiso shows that he can move the ball both ways in the air and off the seam. And Lungi showed against England that he's not just a towering brute. He's got that slower ball under the back of the hand. He knows how to vary his lines and lengths. He can outthink batsmen rather than just out-muscle them. Right. And all the talk ahead of this tournament was how South Africa's got a plan A. They're going to come out here and we're going to boss with the new ball. And no matter what weaknesses the batting side has, the bowlers are going to keep them, give them totals that they can chase and give them targets that they can defend. That was the plan. So, but a plan is only effective if it's enacted out. You know, it's all good to have these well-laid plans. But if you're Kagiso Rabada and Lungi Ngidi, and you're going to bowl half trackers instead of bouncers, if you're going to be bowling half volleys instead of Yorkers, then Faf du Plessis is sitting there thinking, you know what, Oaks, you've kind of scuppered my plans here, because I don't think I've ever seen both of those guys bowl that badly with the new ball. I think I counted, it was something like 28 deliveries until there was an effective bouncer that wasn't a half tracker that was pulled in front of square, or a tame looper that kind of just wafted over the batsman's head into Quinton de Kock's hand. So if for a month they've been hammering aggression, aggression, bouncer, bouncer, we're going to come up against an Asian side who stereotypically isn't that comfortable against the ball that hops around the throat. Yeah. It's just really disappointing that the plan wasn't enacted. And, you know, seeing Ngidi walk off after four inept overs that cost over eights and over, the Proteas have to move to plan B. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back. But yeah, just about everything that could have gone wrong today did go wrong.
Now, Ngidi came into this tournament as one of a handful of bowlers that really, their fitness was in question. So did Rabada, actually.
That's right.
In the latter stages, even though he was doing quite well. And now that we're hearing that Ngidi is out for Wednesday's game against India, by the time this comes out, probably we'll have official word and everything else. But do you think that had an effect in any way? Did they look sluggish?
Well, yes, they looked sluggish, but the whole side looked sluggish. They looked sluggish in the fields. Chris Morris let one go through his legs. That went for four. half chances went down. Yeah, you know, momentum is a funny thing and it's hard to quantify, but for whatever reason, momentum wasn't on the South African side. But getting back to the injuries, the plan was always the same, despite the fact that Steyn's shoulder has kept him, you know, useless. I don't mean that in an offensive way. He hasn't been of use, is what I'm saying, since they've been in the UK. Rabada came back from a back niggle. Henrik Nortje's hand meant he wasn't touring. Yeah. And as you're saying, Ngidi's fitness has kind of always been an issue. That is the problem with a big guy like that. It's perhaps a bit worrying. And Faf du Plessis said that he has to work on his fitness. So maybe there's some kind of things that we can read between the lines there. But my concern is that so much was invested in plan A, but plan A was kind of always flirting with disaster, because if your plan A is relying on a quartet of fast bowlers, all of whom have struggled with injury or are on the verge of not playing, my question to them is, well, what was plan B? Mm. Where was the foresight to think of, okay, well, we've got X, Y, and Z? Because I look at India and they can beat you in many ways. Yeah. And I look at England and they can beat you in many ways. I look at West Indies, I look at Australia, some of the, you know, the other contenders. And I think South Africa coming into it, yes, maybe we weren't favorites, but we were one of four potential semifinalists. I look at all those four potential other semifinalists, yeah, and they can beat you in different ways. This South Africa team can only beat you in one way. And you take that away from them as a result of injured bowlers, and they look an ordinary side. And Bangladesh made them look an ordinary side.
Ah, mate, now I'm wishing we had the old Super 6 format of the Cup.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's not looking so hot now, is it?
No, it isn't. Like, 6 out of 9, we probably would have scraped through, but like 4 out of 9, it's a different story altogether. And the batting, okay, we've touched on the bowlers, but the batting. A lot of people are saying that Otis Gibson's tenure and the removal of Neil McKenzie, I know hindsight is 2020, yeah. But Dale Bankerstan has copped it a little bit as batting coach, because we've not seen like the lineup really, really fire. You either have Quinny doing well right at the top, or have someone like Faf come in, rescue the innings in the middle. Occasionally you've had a Rusty van der Dissen or a David Miller at times, maybe not often enough, or Peshukwayo coming in to do a job. Never really the full batting lineup really showing its might. Are we suffering for what's been 2 years worth of really inept inconsistency from our top four batters?
Okay, so there's two things there. The one is Dale Bankenstein versus Neil McKenzie in the batting coach, and the other one is I'll start with this, the second point I want to make. So I guess that in effect makes it my first point. I once asked Gavin Hunt, Bidvest Wits coach, is he still Wits's coach? Anyway, the football manager. I once asked him what makes a good manager, and he just said very pointedly, good players. He said good players make a good manager. He said it's that simple. The manager with the better players 9 times out of 10 wins. Sometimes you tinker with something and it comes off. You put a holding midfielder here, a left back there, whatever, you win the game. But good players in any sport win you sports matches. The truth is, apart from Quinton de Kock, there isn't one world-class batsman in that side right now. Yeah, Hashim Amla was once world. I believe that. I think that Faf du Plessis is probably in the second tier of batsmen. Okay. I think that Aidan Markram is in the second tier of batsmen with the potential to enter the first tier. I think apart from Quinton de Kock, no one is in that upper echelon right now. We got some looks who have got potential to do it. Rusty is handy. JP has I don't think has middled, and I love JP. I think he's one of the best guys in world cricket, but he hasn't middled a ball for the last maybe 2 years. And we just don't have a batting lineup. We just don't have the world-class batsmen. So now, on to the second point. Do we blame the coach? Maybe we can say, okay, Dale Bankenstein isn't doing the job that Neil McKenzie had. But Neil McKenzie had AB de Villiers at the peak of his powers. He had Faf du Plessis at the peak of his powers. Yes, Faf is kind of carrying the side right now. They had an emerging Quinton de Kock. He had Hashim Amla.
Getting runs, that helps.
Exactly. And you know what? They also had a Dale Steyn who was keeping the other side pegged back. They had a Vernon Philander who was keeping the side pegged back. So, again, better players make better coaches. good coaches make better players. But I think that you are kind of restricted with the raw ingredients that you dealt with. Another thing that I'd like to say to people on Twitter and social media, because I see a lot of people chiming in, sharpening the pitchforks and burning the torches whenever Dale Benkenstein's name comes up. I would like these Twitter people to tell me, well, what does a batting coach do? Don't just point to the runs, because there's a myriad of reasons why one batting unit makes runs and another batting unit doesn't. Yeah. But if you're going to lay the blame solely at the batting coach, I want you to provide a caveat of saying, well, this is what Neil McKenzie did, and this is now what Dale Benkenstein is not doing. Because if you're just going to throw away a term that is easy to spew onto social media and say it's the batting coach, well, then tell me what that means. Provide some analysis, because I'm so tired of – sorry if I'm sounding ranty, but I'm so tired of South African sports fans just coming onto social media and telling it like it is without supporting it with any nuance, with any understanding of what happens behind the scene, of what it takes to be a batting coach. I'm happy for people to come and tell me this is why Dale Benkenstein is struggling, but I'm not happy for people to tell me he is to blame without providing that caveat.
Oh, well put. I like the football analogy with the key ingredients. So by that estimate, then I guess Trevor Bayliss has the best ingredients, and are the English bringing it home this summer, do you think?
You know, I think you add Jofra Archer to this, who I saw, I was watching him against South Africa on Thursday. Jeepers, I haven't seen a fast bowler. You know, he reminds me of what Kagiso Rabada could be. I think you know, an uninjured Kagiso Rabada.
Yeah.
Mitchell Starc at his prime, a Dale Steyn at his prime, a guy who just looks like his body was made to bowl a cricket ball very fast.
He's Indian originally, is he not?
Yes, he was born in Barbados. His father is British, which is why he was able to qualify.
Fair then.
Hey, my friend, this is the land of the British Empire. This is the colonial heartland. You want to talk about fairness, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
Yeah. And they didn't want Jofra Archer in the first place.
Well, that's – yeah. Well, the West Indies didn't want him. The West Indies didn't pick him for the under-19 side, so just think they could have had him. But with getting back to the raw ingredients, you add Jofra Archer to this England side, and as much as it pains me to say it as a rainbow-blooded South African sports fan, I think that this maybe makes England – this England side one of the best ODI teams in history. They bat all the way down to number 11. Adil Rashid, who was scheduled to come in at 11 against South Africa, has an average of 20 and a strike rate of 100. This is a guy batting at 11. I wrote in a piece a couple of days ago that England treat the loss of wickets the way a drunk driver treats a pothole. They just keep the foot down, and they just keep driving. They don't care. Yeah. Johnny Bairstow goes out in the second ball of the innings to Imran Tahir. If South Africa lost a wicket in the first over to a spinner, the pandemonium that would have struck in the dressing room, there would have been five runouts and they would have been bowled out for 130. England don't care. They just keep going. And that is just the mindset but it's also the raw ingredients. They just filled with players who can clear the boundary at will. I mean, Ben Stokes is catching pigeons behind his back on the boundary. They've got a fast bowler who can generally strike fear in the opposition. They've got a wrist spinner who's one of the best in the world. They've got all rounders who chip in with bat and ball. They look a complete side, and they are going to take some beating.
Quite the opposite of the Proteas. Now, thanks, Dan. I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to put you a little on the spot before we go. I want you to name me the upset of the week from these following options. Andy Ruiz knocking out Anthony Joshua to win the WBA, WBO, IBF, and IBO heavyweight titles. Mm. The Chiefs coming down from 20 points to beat the Crusaders in Fiji. Bangladesh beating the Proteas. And Sophia Kenin knocking out Serena Williams from Roland Garros in the third round.
Jeez, what a weekend. Did that all happen this weekend?
It all happened.
And you know what? We all, before I answer the question, we all want the Proteas to do well, and we are all ardent fans, and sometimes that can make us jingoistic, and we like to thump our chest and get angry on social media. But just those four things that you listed, isn't that what makes sport so incredible? That unscripted drama, you just can't replace that, where a no-hoper who has a body like mine can go knock out a man who looks like he was carved out of marble. So I think that upset of putting Joshua down twice, yeah, Ruiz, I think that's got to be one of the upsets, just for the fact that he looks like he's got the same fitness regime as me.
I think Ruiz has spoken for all of us, mate.
Yeah.
I want you to give me the playmaker of the week as well before we close. Ben Stokes for that catch to dismiss Andile Petrukwai, was it, on the boundary?
That's right.
Shakib Al-Hassan and Mishriku Rahim for their 140-run third wicket partnership against the Proteas. Mm. And Liverpool winning this European trophy, beating Spurs 2-0 in Madrid.
Okay, well, as a Man United fan and as a Proteas fan, I don't really want to select any of them.
So take two incorrect answers.
Okay, so can I choose? I think we expected Liverpool to win. We know the quality of the Bangladesh attack, and they were helped by some poor bowling. But there is no accounting for that Ben Stokes catch. That was quite unbelievable. It defied logic. Some John C. Rhodes fans, myself included, might disagree and say otherwise, but that was maybe the best catch I've ever seen live. It just defied it. It's because he made a mistake. He wandered too far in off the boundary. He actually wasn't meant to be in that position. But and Petrukwai couldn't have hit that harder. He couldn't have hit that slog sweep harder. So it just shows that even South Africa's best is still trumped by English brilliance.
Mm. It's going to be a hard tournament. The Proteas are facing India in the next game. Probably by the time this comes out. Oh, man. We have to face India, West Indies, a whole list of good teams, possible champions, Australia, New Zealand. How do you fancy us from here on in?
My man, I am worried. I don't know what to say. I'm covering my first ever World Cup. I'm just hoping that by the time we play Australia in July, I'm not just watching a team playing for nothing. You know, I'd like to have some sort of chaos going into that final round. No, I'm nervous. I think that ahead of the tournament, I asked Otis Gibson earlier today in the press. I said, how many games do you think you could have been allowed to lose or would have been acceptable for you to lose to still make the semifinals? And though he didn't answer the question, I still think their destiny is in their own hands. But man, it doesn't get any easier against Virat Kohli and his team, who haven't played a game. It'll be South Africa's third game and India's first. So if there was any doubt that the BCCI control cricket, there's your answer. Though don't let this go too far, because I don't want them to take away my accreditation.
Controls cricket. I'm going to lead with that one.
Yeah.
Right, and on to the second part of this episode, and it's about an inside look into the controversial Enlightened Christian gathering, Prophet Shepherd Bushiri's church, and one of the most devout followers of that church called Diani Sugar Mabunda. As well as the influence of religion on sports, is there a line and can it be crossed? Diani Mabunda is one of the most talented South African footballers. He is the fulcrum in the Mamelodi Sundowns midfield, and he has risen to occupy the same role for Bafana Bafana at international level. He is currently part of the preliminary squad set to go to the Africa Cup of Nations this June. But for a while he has made headlines outside of the football field because of his curious devotion to Prophet Bushiri, or better known as the Major One. About 2 months ago, I decided to go down to the Pretoria-based church with Mabunda to try and figure out what it was about the Major One that attracted people like him to his following. I went on the premise that it was Mabunda himself who would take me to the church and we would sit together during one of these services, and Mabunda agreed. And if you want to read that story, just go to the top of my Twitter page. I'm at @Sbu_Mjigeliso. The link is pinned there. You might recall that last December, 3 women died during a stampede at the church, and Bushiri has been in the headlines again this year when him and his wife Mary were arrested on tax evasion, fraud, and money laundering charges. When we got to the church, the place was heavily stacked by Bushiri's security men.
Nonetheless, I was chaperoned into one of the most VIP parts of the main marquee, where Mabunda and I sat down and had a chat about his love for the church and, of course, the major one. I spent the better part of 4 hours at the church, really soaking in the atmosphere. I want you to listen to some of the highlights from that interview with Mabunda. He touches on the following points. One, praising the major one every time he scoops a Man of the Match award. And two, his financial contributions to the church. Have a listen.
The thing is that people don't know that I've been playing football for so long and I had never been recognized as a Man of the Match before. There was I would play so many games and people would tell me you had a great game, you deserve Man of the Match, but it was never awarded. The first Man of the Match I got was after I came to this church, after I'd been prayed for breakthrough, and things began to move, things began to be falling into place, and God has really manifested himself mightily in my career. Hence, I never forget the person that God used to change my story, which is Major One. My offering and tithe and seeds are not necessarily for the growth of other people. It's just a principle that God has placed that we should do. It doesn't matter whether people are receiving it or not, but the mere fact that I'm honoring the word that God spoke, that I must be faithful with my tithe and offering, that must be done, irregardless of whether it's to help someone or what. But that is what God said it must be done. The problem is people think that when we give offering and tithe, we are giving it to a man of God. We are not giving it to a man of God. The Bible says God said, give your offering and tithe. And if the leader, if people think that you are giving money to a man of God, they are wrong. Because when you give, you are giving to God. You are not giving to a man of God. If we were giving to a man of God, how many other churches out there have been there for so many years, and yet the man of God is not rich? And they pay tithes, they do everything, they do this, but the man of God is not rich. So the people think that we give money. My tithe is to God.
Now, at the top of the show, I said this segment was about sports and religion and whether there is a line and can it be crossed. Mabunda isn't the only sports figure that has courted controversy on the subject. Of course, Israel Folau is another one. The Waratahs and Wallabies fullback was found guilty of a high-level breach of Rugby Australia's code of conduct, and they tore up his contract, basically firing him from all rugby. In an Instagram post, Folau made what appeared to be discriminatory comments regarding homosexuals. The post read, "Warning, drunks, homosexuals, adulterers, liars, fornicators, thieves, hell awaits you." We don't need to go through all the contents of those posts. That's what the internet is for, of course. But we'll discuss how Folau and Mabunda's faith-based utterances have divided opinion in the sporting world. With me for this conversation, as I said, is Times Live sports journalist Mahlatsi Mphahlele, one of the most knowledgeable sports writers in the business. And he had this to say about the thorny issue. Tell me, on our topic today, what have you made of Tiani Mabunda's love and passionate advocacy for Prophet Shepherd Bushiri's enlightened Christian gathering church?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. I guess generally in sports, sports and religion has always been here and there, you know, going hand in hand. You know, more often than not, you see players before the game, you know, praying or observing whatever religious beliefs that they do. You know, so sports and religion has always been hand in hand. Obviously, Tiani believes in what he believes in. And he believes strongly in what he believes in, and he has, you know, sort of to, you know, to the general public, divided opinion on his staunch love for the Church of Bushiri.
A lot.
But I guess, you know, at the end, I mean, you know, I'm a Christian and I believe in what I believe in, and I don't think anyone has got the right to judge me, so maybe we shouldn't be too harsh on judging him or any other person who believe in whatever religion that they believe in.
Some people feel that, you know, when he goes up to get his Man of the Match award and thanks the Prophet, you know, some people believe that he's put the cart on the other side of the horse, you know, that it's a lot to do with Prophet Bushiri rather than a religious
thanking God thing, and that's where a lot of their fans really give their backlash.
Yeah, I guess if you look in the country at the moment, we you know, from a societal point of view, we do have this challenge. I don't want to call it a problem per se, but this challenge where, you know, there's a lot of mushrooming churches where a lot of people, you know, to an extent, tend to believe more into the pastors or the priests than what the traditional way of praising has always been.
Yeah.
When I go to church, I don't pray to the pastor. I pray to, you know, I read the Bible and I you know, my prayer goes to God.
Pray to God. Yeah.
But you know, it's very difficult because, you know, you can say it's the new way of doing things, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
It's not for me to say, because I don't think I'm qualified to make that that kind of a comment.
Sure.
When Tiani gets the man of the match, he goes on TV. He thinks, I know, I hear people they call him Papa or whatever they call him.
Yeah.
It is what he believes in. And it will be very difficult to really, you know, make him move away from what he believes in, because that's what he genuinely believes in. And, you know, I mean, like I indicated earlier, I guess we just have to respect the way he wants to do things, and it is the way it is, and unfortunately, there's nothing much we can do about it.
He credits the prophet for his sharp upturn in football fortunes. If you remember, Diani, he wasn't playing much after being signed from Black Leopards, very talented midfielder nonetheless, and he says there were injuries that he needed surgery for and he didn't go for the surgery, and the prophet intervened with his prophecies, I guess, and his prayers, and then suddenly Diani Mabunda became the fulcrum of what we now know to be the best Sundowns team we've ever seen, because of their Champions League exploits, which Mabunda was part of, and their league exploits, obviously. Do you think there's some merits to what he said?
Well, I always find it difficult to sort of, you know, when players say those things, because more often than not, you can't really argue against science. You know, I mean, you know, it's an issue of, you know,
belief versus
it's an issue of belief, and
say,
because I mean, at the same time, someone can say we don't know. I mean, if he didn't go to the church, things may, you know, may have turned out the way they have turned out anyway.
Yeah, like, know, it's coincidence.
Yeah, maybe it's a coincidence that he went to church and things started turning out. He may not have gone to church, and you know, maybe when he was struggling with injuries, he may went the scientific way and you know, got medical help or whatever the story may be.
Yeah.
We will never know, but that's what he believes in. And you know, it is extremely difficult to get into the mind of somebody and make them believe otherwise, because religion is something which is you know, very, very difficult.
Of course, it's subjective.
It's subjective, and people believe in what they do. And I mean, there are certain people who will believe in the exact opposite of what he believes in.
Yeah.
It is just how, as human beings, we are wired. And whether it's true or not, I guess we'll never know. But I will tend, you know, in terms of these things of injuries and sports, I would rather, you know, advise, you know, professional sportsmen and women to believe more into, you know, proven scientific solutions to injuries and stuff than to go into this priest of things. I mean, recently we had a situation with Papi Fati who recently died.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, he ignored you know, advices from medical people and decided to continue playing under advice of you know, traditional healers. And as we speak now, the guy is dead. Maybe if he had listened to medical people and stopped playing, he would still be alive.
It's actually sad about Papi Fati, because he went as far as blaming witchcraft for his misfortune.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when he was here in South Africa playing for Vets, he, you know, looked to be quite a, you know, a solid proper football player.
Yeah, he led Burundi to AFCON qualification.
You know, and you know, he led Burundi to AFCON qualifications while he was playing, and he was not supposed to have been playing. You know, it is unfortunate. I think, you know, listening to science, for me, would be an advice I would give to any sportsman or woman, unlike believing in these things that we, you know, sometimes we do believe in. And you know, I'm not saying this to in any way as a sign of disrespect to what people believes in, because each and every person is entitled to believe in whatever believes in. But as a matter of a personal opinion, you know, I would rather go to a doctor and get checked than than go to a street corner and have somebody telling me, you know, blowing stuff and saying, you know, this is what is my problem. I'm not disrespecting people who blow bones, but my personal, you know, beliefs is that I would rather, you know, be informed by what science say than what, you know, people believe in the other stuff.
That's it from me, Sbum Jikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.